What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. My guests today are the filmmakers behind a phenomenal new documentary on Kevin Garnett. It's called Kevin Garnett, Anything is Possible. It's available on Showtime and the Showtime app as of Friday, November 12th. That is the date that this podcast is dropping. So if you're listening to this, it should be available right now or within a few hours. Either way, go find it. It's incredible. Joining me to discuss the documentary are the co-director, Eric Newman, and the executive producer, Brian Daly. And they got so many great stories to tell. I've seen the screener of the film. It's an incredible ride. 2 hours, but it flies by, takes you from KG's youth and his basketball origin story all the way through to his retirement. Of course, the Timberwolves years, the championship in Boston. A lot of surprises along the way, some new insights into KG, things that, you know, 24 years covering the league, things that I didn't know. And some great voices in this film, too. They got Allen Iverson, Paul Pierce, Doc Rivers, Snoop Dogg. Yes, Snoop. And in fact, those are some of the best scenes are between Snoop and KG. This episode of the pod was also just really fun for me on a personal level because Eric Newman, who is, as I say, the co-director, he and I are good friends. We were co-workers at Bleacher Report years ago. One of my favorite people to have worked with back in the day, and I just couldn't be more proud as a friend to see the amazing work that Eric is doing now. So, yeah, a little bit of personal interest in this one, but mostly it's just a great film about KG, and this was a really fun interview with Eric and Brian. So listen to the podcast, then go watch the film, or stop this right now, go watch the film first, and then there's no spoilers or anything. You can do it any way you want to. Anyway, before we get to all that, quick reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to the Crossover Pod wherever you get your podcasts. Check us out on the YouTube feed as well under the Sports Illustrated Podcasts banner. And Chris Mannix and I have a fun new video feature which you can find on YouTube. It's called Order on the Court. We pick a topic, make our arguments, you decide the winner. So go check that out too. Hit me with all your feedback on Twitter, at Howard Beck. Okay, talking Kevin Garnett and the new documentary about him, Eric Newman and Brian Daly are coming up next. So stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, pleased to be joined by the filmmakers behind Kevin Garnett, Anything is Possible, co-director Eric Newman and executive producer Brian Daly. Gentlemen, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Howard. Great to join you.
I can finally say what up, Beck, in proper context.
You can.
Great to be here with you, buddy.
And I can say hello, Newman, for all of my podcast listeners to hear, so that I can beat to death further a joke that I've been beating to death since you and I started working together 8 years ago. And you're still putting up with it, which is honorable. This was a phenomenal ride, as I mentioned in the intro to the episode today. 2 hours, and I texted you this, Eric, as soon as I finished watching it. It went by so fast, I would have watched another 2-3 hours. KG, we know even before there's a documentary done, before a film is made about him, that he's an incredibly compelling and energetic figure. And so it's a natural in some ways, but I feel like one of the great joys of watching this film is that we saw, I feel like, the full KG. There's so much there. He's so great as the narrator of his own life. Not that you guys didn't have to do a lot of lifting at times, but it almost felt like he's one of those guys you could flip the camera on and just say, go, because he's actually, I feel like, a natural storyteller. He emotes so well, as we know. So let me just start with this. What was the collaboration with him like? He is an executive producer on this himself. How much is the two of you as filmmakers kind of sketching this out versus KG saying, listen, this is the way to tell my life story? Where's the meeting of the minds there?
Well, it started, we can get to the backstory a little later on, but, you know, in terms of coming together with KG, and for some that only know him for his on-court personality, he is so humble. And we literally had to force him to the middle where he wanted to lay out something, Howard, that started with the impact and domino effect, of course, of his leap from high school to the NBA in 1995, and then just wanted to trace all of those things it led to. But he kept leaving out his story. So, you know, I thankfully was put in a room with him in January of 2019 when Brian and I were both working on the DeMarcus Cousins film, The Resurgence. And thanks to Mark Levin, our partner at Blowback Production, who had a relationship he was building with KG and his group, he got me in a room and we just started vibing on this synergy about the time frame of 25 years. And yes, all the things that he impacted from that decision, but then also weaving in his story. And obviously that's an incredible arc as it is. So that's where we really started to put the framework of this together and then flush out all the different elements, because as we all know, there's so much that goes into this story, both leading up to him declaring for the draft in 95 at Farragut in Chicago. And then of course, everything that happens thereafter going to the NBA.
Brian, jump in. What was the collaboration like with Garnett? And how much else did you guys have to, if he doesn't want to talk about himself, did that present a particular challenge? It's a 2-hour movie about Kevin Garnett. How did you find a way to kind of get him to engage on that level so that's not just about, okay, the broad outlines?
Yeah, that was one of the craziest parts to get to know him early and understand how humble and almost uncomfortable he is talking about himself. So getting him comfortable with the idea that, no, Kevin, this is not a story about the last 25 years and you've done some things. This is about you, and you need to be comfortable and accept that. And it's not going to work any other way. So, you know, he slowly, I think, and a testament to Eric and the team around him, he was just so comfortable from day one. And thinking back to that first, you know, pitch meeting, if you will, but it was so far from a pitch meeting. You know, typically pitch meeting, you think people coming in with decks, selling really hard. You know, you got to think about it once you leave the room for a couple of days, maybe weeks, maybe months. You know, within a minute, we knew right away that Kevin is a storyteller on another level. His personality, his charisma, his energy. By 5 minutes in, he was sweating through his golf shirt as if he was on the court, just to give you an idea of the intensity at which he was speaking to everybody. And Steven Espinoza was in that room, president of sports at Showtime, and they had some history as well. They went back a couple of years. Steven was on a Nets plane over to, I believe it was China, when the Nets were playing over there. And that was when Kevin and Paul were on that Nets team. They hit it off on the plane, talked boxing for a bunch of hours, kept the whole plane up. So at that point, they had said, look, when the time is right, you know, let's talk. And fast forward a couple of years later, the time was right. Eric and the Levins and Content Cartel, everyone came together. And it was an immediate understanding that this is an incredible project. It should live nowhere else but Showtime. And it fits so well into what we've done and where we're going.
You know, my impression.
And Howard, just imagine that intensity and passion channeled into talking story and talking documentary and talking rawness and realness. And that's how he is in that space, except he doesn't have to talk trash to anybody and he doesn't have to dive on the floor and he doesn't have to yell at a referee. And we're watching this and experiencing this. And we're just kind of like, how lucky are we that we don't have to like force it out of the subject? The faucet is already on, and you know us well enough to know how passionate we are about these stories. And for us, this was a story that we've wanted to tell for a much longer time than Showtime basketball has been around. So it yeah. was it was a really magical convergence here when it all came together.
And if I could, once that faucet went on, we couldn't turn it off. And then we found ourselves, the challenge of the project became, how do we condense this down to 2 hours? At one point, multi-part was on the table, and there were a couple of different ways we were looking at it, but I think we landed on a great way to go about it in terms of the film, and then more to come with Kevin down the road.
I have this vision of him sitting in like one of these studio spaces that you guys got to film this, or even in his own home or wherever else, of like before the camera going on, like KG, like hinching up his pants and like banging his head into like, I don't know, a camera, a microphone, something, would like just, cause you're describing him getting all worked up and lathered up the way he does, which I could totally see. Like, I imagine that's just how he does everything. Like probably before dinner, he gets all psyched up for dinner. Was it that kind of intensity in the room? Did you have to kind of coach him through it a little bit, or was it literally, as I said earlier, just kind of flip the camera on, KG, go, and he goes?
Well, we have to remember that when we started making this film, we were living in a completely different universe. We started making this film in January of 2020. Ironically, our first 2 days of production were January 24th and January 25th, 2020. Tragically, January 26th was the Kobe Bryant accident. So we had a lot of prep. He prepared for this like he was preparing for a playoff series, except he comes in with that calm before the storm focus. And he doesn't come in raging and ranting. He comes in super positive. His energy on the set is so contagious in the best of ways, where everybody can feel it. And I must say proudly, like, we've all dealt with different athletes in the past. This guy says hello to everybody, gets everybody's name, like wants to not only have that connection, but also like wants to observe the process and learn things. But Howard, I'm going to send you a video I took on my phone, and it's literally him walking in for the first time before we start that hero. And he walks in and he takes that big, deep breath, like he's about to leave the locker room and run out of the tunnel. And it's really, really special. And we just knew that it was going to be an awesome ride. But, you know, we had our prep. He had his things prepped, of course, that he was going to talk about. But the emotion, the passion, and some of those moments that we captured that came out, like, it wasn't like those were scripted or premeditated. Those were all in the moment, because he was literally going back to those moments in his life during the interviews. And that was special.
What do you think KG most wanted to get across? This is a guy who's lived half of his life in the public eye, sometimes willingly, willingly, but warily, I think, somewhere along the way there too. Like, I thought he was much more open in his early years with the Timberwolves than maybe later as far as with us in the media. The thing I've always been impressed by with him is that when KG is in the right mood, whether that's about the question that was asked or whether it's just about situational, when he's on, he's freaking incredible. And I'm talking about, you know, during his playing days. And if he's not in a mood, you either don't see him at all or he's not giving you much. But when he wanted to be open and engaging, he was as engaging as any athlete that I've seen in this league. He's not always that thrilled to be in the spotlight. So after all this time, he decides with you guys that he's going to do this. Do you think that he had something in mind about, now that he's been out of the game for a bit, now that he's been retired, that there's a story still to tell that he didn't at the time, maybe because he was sometimes a bit reticent with the media?
Yeah, I think so. If I could go first, recall that first meeting and him talking about why he wanted to do this. And it was important for the younger generation of players right now and the guys in the league to understand where he came from and what his class did for the NBA to set the table for what the league is now. He talked about this tear in the matrix, and that every 20, 30 years, there's a tear and whatever it is, in this case, the league, kind of, you know, few things will happen to kind of reinvent and create a new league as we know it. And he sees that tear happening again now and wanted to make sure that the younger generation of players and fans out there understand when the last tear was, and that was him and Kobe and AI coming into the league and really changing the face of it. When the league had other plans, according to him, he feels that they came in and kind of shifted everything. And that seemed to be the burning desire from his side. He keep me honest, but you know, that was the one takeaway I had for his motivation here.
Oh yeah, that's a big part of it, and what goes with it, Howard, is, like we all are, he is such a student of history and a sponge for it and wanted to do the history the right way. And he consumes documentaries and unscripted content in and out of sports like we do. And he's got his own tastes, his own passions. And he wanted to make sure this was inspiring. And something that he and I talk about often is, you know, can we educate while being entertaining? And I think, you know, I think we did that, which is a kudos to him and of course, our filmmaking team. But he wanted to make sure this was laid out the right way. This was true to his voice, true to his journey. And at the end of the day, a positive piece. You know, there are some things I'm sure you'll bring up that, you know, happened during his journey. And we all know things that happened during his journey, some of which weren't overly positive. Some of them are in the film, some aren't. But he wanted this to be inspiring and positive, and we took pride in that, and it's important messaging, especially with the world that we're in now.
It's easy to forget. Oh, go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, I was just going to add to that. You know, it made me think of something in terms of every conversation we have with him. Him as a creator and a consumer of content and a critic of content. Every conversation starts with, hey, have you guys checked out this Wu-Tang series? Or did you see that doc on Rick James? Or, B, you got to bring back Ray Donovan. What are you guys doing? Like, everything with him, he consumes so much. So as a creative, it's cool. And he brought a lot of ideas and energy from things he was watching to this. So Eric just stimulated that thought that, you know, from a creative and consumption standpoint, he's, you know, there's no one watching more than Kevin.
Yeah, and let me also just add, while we're just talking about some of these filmmaking elements, like Mark Levin, Dan Levin, my co-director, Mark's EP, it's Dan's father. They're a father-son filmmaking combo. Mark's company is Blowback Productions, who originally met Kevin in Content Cartel several years ago. Howard, you know the Levins from a little bit from The Legend of Sweet Pea that I worked on with them years ago. It couldn't have been a better partnership because of how Dan and I complement each other, but KG's trust in Mark, Mark's trust in us, and just this whole synergy around this story, how to tell this story and how to work with Kevin. You couldn't have game planned it any better.
Brian, you said something that made me think for a second about this idea of the tear in the matrix, which I love as an analogy or reference point. Also because I think when I think about Kobe in that era, that's, I think, when the Matrix movies first hit. So their tear in the matrix was being this prep to pro generation that revolutionized the league in so many ways before the door slammed shut on the prep to pros. But Garnett is a revolutionary figure in the NBA anyway, because we talk about now, like, Giannis and Jokic and Durant, these guys who are unicorns or these evolutionary kind of players. But KG was that before any of these guys. Virtually 7 feet, 6'12", whatever however he wants to describe it. He never would cop to being 7 feet. I wonder if you guys were able to nail him down on that during filming. But he was a virtual 7-footer who could do everything. Play on the perimeter, put the ball on the floor, take you off the dribble, play in the post, guard the rim, all of it. He was freaking incredible. And people who were Celtics fans maybe, or who started watching the NBA around the time of the Celtics championship, that's not the same Garnett as the guy we saw enter the league in the mid-90s, because he's a little older and didn't quite do all those things at the same level. So what, a couple things. I want to talk about that. But Brian, when you mentioned tearing the matrix and that KG sees one now, is it about this other shift in the way the game is played and how bigs play in the game? What was it that he was tapping into?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's positionless basketball, as it's been termed now. I think he sees the game entirely shifting away from the league he was in. And I think that was at the core of his thought. He also told a cool story about Michael Jordan. And I believe it was Jordan telling him, you'll know when you're done when you look around and you don't recognize anything anymore. And he said he had that moment. I believe it was in Brooklyn, or perhaps when he was back in Minnesota for the final curtain call. But to answer your question, Howard, I think it's the way the game is played now. And again, to go back to it, and he ushered that whole movement in, you know, the idea of bringing a big out and handling and shooting threes. you know, among many other things he changed. And I think that's, again, at the core of this film, is that his fingerprints are all over the modern NBA, both from on court and from a business and from salary cap, everything. You know, this era, you're quick to think Kobe, you're quick to think AI, but really his prints are significantly all over it as much as either of those two guys.
Newman, do you have something you want to add on that? Or
it's crazy to go back and look at the totality of the skill set during the prime years with the Timberwolves. And I don't think, I mean, obviously our age bracket remembers it and saw it, but people need to take advantage of YouTube and go watch the work this guy was doing. It was flat out scary. And then if you want to play the comp game with what he would do with in his prime in the modern era, with that attitude and that hunger and the way he thinks about load management, it would be flat out scary. And just remarkable the domino effect that came from him, Kobe, AI, not just, you know, yes, the power forward position, but the style of play as a whole. And you could really, you know, I don't want to jump too far ahead to some of the film structure things, but, you know, when we put the 2-hour structure in place, when we made the decision to go that route, we identified these four pillars that were going to be kind of tent poles for us. And that was obviously the fact that he changed the game going from high school to the NBA for the first time in 20 years. He changed the business side of the game, obviously, which you know well, which was the contract and then obviously everything that happened with the lockout. He redefined the power forward position, which we're still feeling the effects of on the floor now. And then, you know, the move to Boston ushered in the super team era. Those four pillars for one person's impact are... find anybody in any industry that's made that kind of impact along the way over that course of time. And it's truly remarkable.
One other lane to hit on too, Howard, is hip hop. And, you know, it was met with resistance when Kevin was part of that movement that brought that in and cross cultures and, you know, everything from the dress code to the music was met with resistance from the league at that point. And now you fast forward now, you know, you have Drake as an owner, Jay-Z as an owner. You have it embedded in NBA culture in every which way. So that's another area he did talk about, in that if you look at it now versus 20 years ago, I mean, they broke the matrix, if you will, with that and started that. And if you look at it now, it's unimaginable to see the NBA without that hip hop DNA in it right now.
Yeah. And the resistance to that back in the 90s, late 90s, even into the early 2000s, Iverson having his tattoos airbrushed on an NBA official league magazine cover, a lot of other things, just the way people talked about the game. None of that exists. Like, it's completely changed. It is just a given. There's a really cool moment. I don't want to spoil anything from the film, so people just go check it out. But there is a really cool moment in there where KG is talking about music and basketball and the rhythms and the way it all kind of lines up in his, I wouldn't say in his head, it's in his body. The way it all just kind of sinks. It's really cool. It's really incredible. And it is a different kind of insight into Kevin Garnett than I think we'd ever heard during his career. And it's the way he channels his passion and can talk about these linkages that's so fascinating, which is the kind of the same thing I picked up from you guys. He's been being able to connect to you guys on a level of your industry as filmmakers because he kind of gets it. No, he's not in that world, but he can see how these things line up. Were there some of those moments where there was like an unexpected connection from him as basketball superstar, basketball prodigy to, you know, your work as filmmakers, where he got it because of something else, that a connection that only he could make because of the level he operates at as a genius in his own field?
Well, that's a great example of one of them. And I remember the moment he said that, and I'm like, how unbelievably brilliant is this? Because, you know, at one point we all try to be athletes, right? And that's originally how Brian and I met 25 years ago. We were trying to extend our athletic careers at the D3 level. And we, you know, we have these ear pods in our ear and we're moved by certain pieces of music and certain intensities and certain things. So when he said that, I was just like, oh my God, how lucky are we? And we always identified the tone and attitude of DMX with KG, and KG loves DMX, and rest in peace DMX. And tragically, we couldn't get them together due to a number of reasons, but that example right there is a perfect one of just how culture, basketball culture, and his story intertwine. And then, you know, for Brian and I mean, we're the same age. Our senior year of high school was his rookie year. So like evolving as young adults and as basketball fanatics, while this guy is making history as this prep to pro big question mark unknown, and we're watching it all unfold in real time as basketball fans, and to just think about those moments when we'd watch him from afar in amazement, and we'd have conversations with him about these different things from his career, and they would just go deeper and deeper into it. And I think that was one of the big things that helped us build trust with him so quickly, because we were hitting upon those things just in our conversations and in our riffs and brainstorms.
Okay, so at what point, Newman, did you tell him, oh, and by the way, KG, I'm a lifelong Celtics fan. Thank you for bringing back my franchise and putting another banner up in the rafters. I wasn't going to tweak you that badly on this part on your fandom, but you are wearing a green, super green Celtics 2008 championship shirt for our recording today. How much did you have to, like, listen, you're a professional. You and I have worked together a long time. I know we can all separate this stuff. But, sure. You know, there's some part of you that is got to be geeking out making this film with KG, especially as a lifelong Celtics fan, which you are. Did you connect over that? Did you put that in check? Did KG himself put that in check? Like, how did that work?
Definitely connected over it, but connected over it the right way and kept it in check. And Brian knows much more of the fanaticism than most people on earth. He witnessed a lot of it. And actually, you know, Bri, if there was ever a time to tell the 60-second version of the lottery story, it would be with Howard. But no, it was great. And the big thing, Howard, he knew I understood the importance of what the Celtics meant to him. He also understood that I knew the history. And I think just tying back to what you were saying before about like his hesitation with media. And we've talked about this many times, Howard, both while working together and not working together. There's unfortunately a lot of people covering the game who don't know what they're watching. And there's this thing that we call the eye test. And as a former basketball coach and basketball nut, and Brian is a highly knowledgeable basketball person as well, like, he knew we understood the eye test. He knew what we were watching on the floor. So when it came to the Celtics, yes, I absolutely kept it in check. But I am still very, very superstitious. Wore the same pair of gray and lime green Jordan 3s every time I interviewed him. And this T-shirt just happens to feel really good. So, yeah.
It was just the first thing out of your suitcase today, that's all.
It was picked out just for this, just for you, Beck.
and there's 16 more of those in the suitcase behind it, right?
Well, I was going to say, that's not the only Celtics shirt in the suitcase. But quickly, yeah, I mean, for me to know Eric a long time and know the level and passion of his fandom, to see it cross professionally with Kevin, and it was awesome. And, you know, obviously he's a professional and it was nothing but knowing both sides of it and knowing how much he loves the Celtics and then to work with him on this project in professional settings was pretty surreal at times, but awesome. Very cool.
So we've alluded to this a couple times, but we haven't gotten into it. So let me hit this. You guys start filming weeks before the pandemic really hits. And obviously that throws a curve into many aspects of our lives personally and professionally, but you're going down this road. You still have a project that you're committed to that you've got to complete one way or another. What did it change about this documentary aside from just timeline? I know it probably delayed some things too. And Eric, you mentioned DMX, where, you know, maybe you could have gotten him before his passing, if not for the pandemic, if I'm interpreting you correctly there. What else did that present just in terms of the challenges and maybe even opportunities?
Well, we obviously have a great chorus of voices in this, right? And it's we're very fortunate, and I'm sure you'll bring up some of those later. But the strategy originally with a lot of those voices was to create these scene work moments like we have with KG and Doc, but do that for five or six people, Kobe mm-hmm. being one of them, which, you know, I had confirmed when we were fortunate enough to film his All the Smoke episode the previous December, a month before. We were going to try to do that with Iverson, do that with Doc, do that with Pierce, do that with Isaiah Thomas, and possibly do that with Kevin McHale, who unfortunately is not in the film due to just not being able to get it coordinated. But the scene work was going to be a bit more present and not rely as much on, you know, still do the single subject interviews, but not live in them as much. But we were so fortunate that we got so many strong ones that that worked itself out. But, you know, we started those beautiful beach scenics and his first hero interview and the fireplace scene. All of that stuff is shot January 24, 25, 2020. And then we wake up the next day, Dan Levin and I go for a quick breakfast. We're still in Beverly Hills. We have a 4 o'clock flight back to New York. And then all of our phones start going crazy and we're in disbelief about what we're seeing and what's going on. And we were literally filming with KG 24 hours before with our toes touching the Pacific Ocean, 10 miles away from where the tragedy happened. And obviously that affected, you know, the world in a certain way, but Kevin specifically, obviously really emotional about it and understandably so. And he needed to just unplug and think, and Bri just, you know, build on this next thing. We're fortunate enough that we're still able to go to Chicago and execute what we were going to Chicago for Showtime Basketball, for Kevin on All the Smoke, but most importantly, for the shoot back at Farragut, because if we don't get that shoot in that way back at Farragut in February of 2020 before the pandemic, we're not sitting here talking about the same film.
And that's All-Star weekend, right? Or the week of the All-Star game in Chicago, which is really like the last big NBA thing that happened before the pandemic. I mean, it was one of the last trips a lot of us took.
Yeah. It was President's Day Monday. It was after the All-Star game. School was closed, and we got in there with Kevin and Coach that Monday right after All-Star.
Important to note, too, I mean, Kevin hadn't been back to the school in 20-plus years, so it was the first time back. He was a bit, I think, emotional and kind of, I don't know, a little intimidated by doing it. It was All-Star weekend. We had all the smoke going on. We had a lot of things going on. And I remember us huddling and saying, okay, do we try and force this? Do we get it in while we're here? It's a Chicago easy flight. We could always come back and get this. And it was literally 50-50. And Dan and Eric made the call to say, I mean, let's just get it. Let's be safe. If we're here, let's rally. So we did it. We you know, got Kevin on board, and thank God we did, because as Eric said, the film would be entirely different if we didn't get that day at the school with him. That essentially, I think, is one of the key anchors to the film and enabled us to keep a majority of the structure that we had outlined pre-pandemic. You know, that helped us, I think, carry it through the pandemic because we had that great weekend in Chicago.
Yeah. And just Howard, just for you to know, like, and obviously included in this show, but you know, we take a 3 month pause. I mean, we're literally 3 months, we're down, and we have to figure out how we're going to move forward. Not so much with, all right, who are we shooting next and those logistics, but more of like, what's our approach going to be? You know, are we taking this 4 to 6 weeks at a time? Are we taking this 2 months at a time? How much can we travel? How much should we lean on remotes? And we just kept having this evolving formula, which eventually led me to going back out to LA in June of 2020. And Brian and I worked out a plan. Dan came out with me for the first week. He had a newborn on the way. So he came out for the first week and we started doing interviews again. So we did part two of KG, but this is where we got Pierce, we got Rondo, we got Doc, we got Cassell, we got Barnes, we got Meta, we got Jelani. I might be missing one, but we got all of those before the bubble started again. So again, it's like, if we don't get these guys now, we're not getting these guys because, you know, Doc, Cassell, Rondo, they had to go back to the bubble. So the timing of that and getting those was huge. And what that allowed us to do was start the edit process. So we could start cutting and molding. And I can't speak highly enough about James Lester, our editor. He's an absolute rock star, and the rest of the post team. We were able to then figure out, okay, we're going to edit as we go. This is what we need from the next people and the next people. And Howard, you did your interview when we were in New York in the fall of 2020. And we just kept it moving. And as Brian says, literally every week across the board on Showtime Basketball stuff that we're building, it's just a first down at a time. It's a first down at a time. And that's all we did. And we're able to chip away at it. And thank goodness it worked out.
Yeah, and I should use this opportunity to apologize to viewers for the overabundance of my face in this film. You blame my two guests today and their film editor. But no, it was an honor to be part of this, honestly. Thank you guys for allowing me to talk for a while on camera about KG.
You're critical. I mean, obviously, glue. Critical glue, Howard.
Critical glue will be my new Twitter avatar bio. I see the guys that you interviewed for the names and faces in this film. It's incredible. I have many moments of just going full Wayne and Garth. I'm not worthy, but it's incredible. So it's a phenomenal lineup of people, including Snoop Dogg, whose home you apparently were in. There's also a really compelling discussion between Kevin Garnett and Snoop about Black Lives Matter, about George Floyd. And it's interesting, I wondered about this decision you guys made as filmmakers, that this is a film that if it had been done at any other time in history, KG's last year, immediately following his retirement, whatever, parts of this are very different because there's no pandemic and there's no Black Lives Matter movement at this level, right? You're finishing this or moving through this while our whole world is being disrupted last year in a lot of really intense ways. And so this becomes part of it. But the film itself, a retrospective on Kevin Garnett's career is going to stand the test of time, that career has nothing to do with that moment, but that moment happened. George Floyd happened. Black Lives Matter happened. The pandemic happened. How did you decide to say, look, we have to at least, weave this in as part of the narrative, even though this is kind of post Kevin Garnett career?
To you real quick, but at one point it was a conversation and possibly a decision. And then after a while, it kind of wasn't even a decision. It was just, it inserted itself as a character in essence. And we had to include it as we told the story through those times, but I'll throw it to E. But my point was, I remember having some conversations, do we not? And then ultimately it wasn't even a decision.
Yeah. The other thing here, and it's the cruel irony, right? Like, if the George Floyd tragedy happens in another city in the United States, another town in the United States that's not Minneapolis, we're not having that moment with him when he's at the memorial. We were going to Minneapolis regardless to try to do some things there. And that day, which is really tough to put into words, and Howard, there's that moment there where KG connects with someone on camera from his past. I don't want to spoil it, but it's like we were supposed to be there with him, and we were in like Gary Trent is there with us, and all these people that he's tied to from his past, and he spent 12 years there. And KG was never one. He was doing all the community stuff behind the scenes in Minneapolis. He wasn't documenting it. He didn't care to have it out there in the press. He was just all about doing the right thing. And that community meant a lot to him. And he wanted to pay his respects. And we were able to get down to the memorial in a very subtle, light footprint way. But from the moment we got there, it was one of the most powerful things I've ever witnessed. And I'm very glad we were able to document him experiencing that. But the key was the right balance in the film. Because without that conversation with Snoop and without that moment, there is no way we can bridge to seeing what went on in Minneapolis. And there was a lot of conversation we had in edit and do we have it here? Are there other places, you know? And it's very delicate. And I think we hit on it the right way. I think we paid it the proper respect and attention. And, you know, Howard, just, you know, tying in, you know, the pandemic, it's like originally we had a few lines about the pandemic or what we're living through. Like we know what we're living through. You sense it through the filmmaking. We don't have to hammer it home. There doesn't need to be a 45-second or 90-second COVID sequence. You see our filmmakers and you see us in bandanas. You see KG with a mask on at different times. Like you see it, you sense it, and we all live through it and continue to live through it. So there was no point in trying to hammer that home anymore. So, you know, Howard, you tell us. I think we hit the right balance there, and I think it works. And Snoop, from both the seriousness, the fun, and that love that they've had for so long, that really shined through. And we were very fortunate to get that scene. And eventually we'll all play ball there together, eventually.
No, that was – Snoop is involved in some of the most poignant moments in this film, in my amateur opinion, just as a viewer. The discussion he and KG have about Black Lives Matter, and then on the lighter side – tinged with some heaviness as well when they're talking about Kobe. Like there's some really fun Kobe stuff there, even as there's some sorrow mixed in. Snoop was phenomenal in this. That the moment you guys got of KG at the George Floyd Memorial in Minneapolis was again just very poignant and moving. And it gave, you know, it's an unfortunate entry point into seeing different aspects of Kevin Garnett, the person, but it did give you as filmmakers and now us as the audience that chance to see this part of KG that I don't think we really could have understood or been that exposed to during the course of his career. There's so much that happened in the course of his career. So I do want to ask a couple things here that like hit me along the way that like, oh man, I'm curious, could they have gone farther in this direction or that direction? Or maybe there's some people who just didn't want to participate in this, but you know, there's obviously a chapter in there about Garnett and Marbury and it didn't work out, and we hear some of the, you know, reasons there, but we don't see Stephon Marbury. And KG's own family is not in this. Are there just some lines that you had to respect that maybe he drew at the outset? Because look, the payoff, again, I'm speaking to my audience here, the payoff is this, whatever the parameters might be, getting Kevin Garnett to the extent that you guys got him with all the passion and insights and openness behind it, I would say is absolutely worth it. But I also do wonder, as a journalist at heart, okay, but there are maybe some lines that couldn't be crossed here. So if there's somebody who's not in the film, is it because there's just not enough room in 2 hours, or maybe some of them didn't want to do it? Maybe KG didn't want them in. Give me some sense of like, say, Marbury, where that fell.
Combination of, you know, A, obviously trying to make a film during a pandemic. Marbury in particular, you know, he did his own doc the prior year. Yeah. KG was not in that. Supposedly they reached out and, you know, he was okay talking about that stuff, obviously, but, you know, there's a chorus of voices that take us through that section of the film, but he did not want to go down that road of trying to bring Steph into the film. That just wasn't something he wanted to do. They've gone their separate ways. Obviously we had that awkward 2009 when Marbury found his way onto the Celtics for a cup of coffee or two, and they obviously were able to have that work without an issue, but it was never the same again. And it was just something that he didn't want to do. And as far as the family stuff goes, you know, his family's located in a couple of different places and relationships have changed and shifted over the years. And it's something that we had talked about many times, both before we started rolling camera, during the process, once the pandemic started. And, we were kind of teetering back and forth. And ultimately it was something that we just decided, look at this story we have. We don't think we need to force this. And there was obviously hesitation on his side. And this is kind of the way it panned out.
Well, and yeah. just to that point real quick, Brian, I'll let you go. But like, I actually thought even without that, even without certain necessarily maybe family voices, because you have his youth coaches and some other key figures from his childhood, the story about kind of his basketball origin story, which I don't think I'd ever heard before, is really interesting. And it involves, you know, an anecdote about his mom and everything, which, again, I'll leave that for the film. People go check it out. But it's really, it's fun. It's interesting. It's a new insight. And so it is all there. So I want to note that as well. Brian, yeah. you want to jump in?
Well, and before you're going to say this, just let me add one thing, like just regards to family and some of those, voices in the film, like it's very clear, like these bonds that he's had for so long, like Coach Wolf from Farragut, Ronnie Fields, like they still feel like family to him. Isaiah Thomas, family. Yeah. It's that type of connection. And it's that type of love. And we felt so fortunate that they felt the same way about him, which is why those interviews we felt were so strong. Bounce past to Brian.
Yeah, I was just going to speak to the wealth of depth that existed with so many of the storylines and the challenges that it did present on the filmmaking side. And, you know, if Eric had his way, it would have been a 10-part series and we would have gone deep into Steph and family and everything. You know, I don't think it was so much Kevin pushing back on anything as much as we had to, you know, kind of pick our pillars and choose how deep. I mean, we would go pretty deep on Minnesota. And the thought is, I mean, going deeper than that with more Marbury or extending some of these pieces. We also had to keep in mind, obviously, the Hoophead can eat this stuff up and watch hours of it. But trying to find that balance of serving the hardcore hoop fan, but then also the casual fan, or maybe not a basketball fan, that would watch this because Kevin's life is so interesting and inspiring. So from the filmmaking standpoint, trying to find that balance, but at some point you got to cap the depth because, you know, in Kevin's instance, we honestly could have had a 4 or 5 hour project here. So it was a bit of a product of that as well.
Okay, so what is on the editing room floor that you really, really wanted to get in? Whether it was a moment of just KG being full KG, or you know, some other little anecdote that you couldn't get in, an interview subject who you would have liked to have shoehorned in. What did you? What was the most painful cut?
Well, I'll start there by saying enter.
There's a lot.
There is a lot, and enter KG certified, which will be the property that we're building with Kevin on Showtime Basketball. That's going to launch sometime in December, January. And I think that was the compromise we all kind of had. Okay. This stuff isn't going to sit on a floor. We have so much. What do we do with it? And the idea to integrate it into a property with Kevin, that'll be one piece of other things we're going to do with him. But there's certainly a lot there that we're going to work with moving forward to give fans more on these different chapters and different shoots that Eric was a part of. So that's my shameless plug for the next project to come with Kevin, but I'll let Eric answer specifically.
I just lobbed that up there for you. How about that? I didn't even realize I was walking right into a plug. That was perfectly done. Seamless.
Beautiful lob. Yeah. So we're excited about that, but E, you could speak to what are some of the painful ones you didn't want out.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like it's going deeper on these stories, right? So obviously the Chicago story is very robust. There's a lot there. You know, we got Isaiah Thomas, you know, his interview was unbelievable, you know, and growing up despising the Isaiah Detroit Pistons, and then him being in New York with the Knicks and me being a lifelong Celtics guy, that was a heck of an eye-opening experience. I loved my conversation with Isaiah. He was so giving of his time, but more so his thoughtfulness. I mean, he's making connections between, you know, the civil rights presence in Chicago and Martin Luther King, and why KG bonded so well with Bill Russell, and just really deep, intelligent, smart stuff. Scoop Jackson was also part of that storytelling. Howard, Scoop and I literally sat for 4 hours. It was unbelievable. Tremendous interview. You know, those 90s battles, would have been great to have some of those power forward opponents on camera, Sheed, Webb, Duncan, but hopefully we'll be able to
do that.
That
was the biggest pain point there, from my opinion. Howard, you'll appreciate this. Getting Eric to sand down the 90s, 2000s power forward section. He felt every guy deserved at least a couple of minutes, and we had to tell him we got to We got to narrow this down to a quicker story here.
We had to explore the pivot on the right, the pivot on the left, the turnaround to both shoulders. No, but so many great voices, right? And so many unique, recognizable guys that are all still have that stature to this day, you know, from Webb, Sheed, Duncan, and then Dirk comes next, and you've got, you know, the Zach Randolphs and all the other guys that came after that. And it was a great time. But Howard, obviously, you know, so much happens that's not in the film after the Celtics win the 2008 championship. That is basketball cinema at its best, meaning the resurgence of super teams and what happens with their big three and LeBron going to Miami. And that really being the last quote unquote rivalry that had some real hatred in the league. So, you know, there's a lot there we couldn't include. You know, there's one scene that unfortunately we had a trim that would have been towards the end of the film where KG and Rondo are together at Staples Center, pregame shoot around. It's pregame of the Celtics Lakers game before the pandemic. I think it's, you know, two weeks after All-Star 2020. Week after All-Star. And, you know, they're just having this big brother, little brother, mentor, mentee moment all these years later, where KG's just pep talking him to waiting his turn and being ready to contribute. The league shuts down, the bubble starts, and who's key to the Lakers capturing their championship is Rondo returning. I'm not making a direct connection, but seeing that brotherhood still that strong years later, and that's one thing that fuels Brian and I and our connection is exactly that.
Speaking of that brotherhood, and I know we got to get moving here in a second and let you guys go. I think I've seen rumblings recently. Again, Ray Allen, not a voice that was in this film, nor did I expect him to be, given the way things went with Pierce, Allen, and Garnett. Have you guys picked up on any rumblings of a reconciliation along the way here? And I suppose that might be a chapter in your next KG series coming, but what do we know about Kevin and Ray at this stage?
Hey, I'm going to let you take that one.
or if you need to know, comment that.
No, I mean, listen, like, you know, it's really interesting, Howard. Like, you know, I talked to Paul about this, and he shared like how his conversations went with Ray. And then during our Cedric Maxwell interview, he kind of was like, at the end, he's like asking about Ray and he wants them to get back together and all this stuff. And you hear Doc talk about what happened and knowing how Kevin feels. And it, I can say this comfortably, confidently, and accurately. It wasn't the what, it was the how. And Kevin has this code. And it's definitely old school, but it's definitely something that I think we all believe in terms of how we live our lives and our relationships. And when it came to the film, he was like, I don't want to go there. So he would answer it while we were talking about the super teams and Miami and things like that. But he didn't want to drill down. He didn't want to harp on it. And it goes back to the mission of the film, to educate, entertain, and keep it positive. And yes, Ray Allen, big part of the second half of his career, obviously a huge part of that championship team. But as far as the fracture and what happened after the 2012 battle with Miami, you know, we'll see how we structure that with what we build out in the future. But we've got a lot of stuff there to use for sure.
Fair enough. Before we go, let me end kind of where this began. You mentioned when you first started filming and it was just or some of those beach scenes and everything else days before and miles away from the tragic helicopter crash that killed Kobe Bryant and his daughter and the others. I don't think I knew much during the time, you know, I covered Kobe for 7 years, as Eric knows. I don't think I knew much in real time about Kobe and KG's connection other than the obvious. Kevin Garnett breaks the barrier in 95, the first in 20 years to go straight from high school to the pros. That opens the door to Kobe and T-Mac and Jermaine O'Neal and a lot of others. And there was always that connection just thematically. They had something in common. I don't think we knew much in real time about what their friendship or bond off the court was. What did you guys pick up along the way there, especially because you're doing this obviously in the wake of Kobe's death. And you know, again, it's touched on in passing, but before we go, I'm just curious if there's anything else you picked up about what the depth of their relationship was.
If I could go first, I think at the core, there was such respect. But when they were living in it during their careers, I think both of them are the ultimate competitors and alphas and almost like two prize fighters or, you know, the way they competed and tried to beat each other. I think there was no room for a friendship at that point. And then it seemed as they got older, it was heading towards a direction where there was obvious appreciation and love. And I think it was headed in a direction where Kevin was excited to kind of build that relationship further with Kobe. That was my observation. What were your thoughts, E?
Yeah, I mean, you see them through the archival in the late 90s, and you know that moment at MSG where KG throws up the lob and Kobe just comes swooping in for the two-hand dunk in slow-mo. It's one of the most beautiful highlights we've ever seen. And back then they were just kids and they got along. But then came the playoff battles with Soda in LA, and Kobe had three rings and KG couldn't get out of the first round. And he's using that to just, you know, there's never been anybody better that we've seen. And it's inspired my life so much, Howard, since 2008, taking whatever he can as fuel and putting it in the fire. So Kobe and Shaq are winning. Well, F these guys. I've got to go harder at them. I can't be friends with nobody out here. And then when it came to Lakers Celtics, and obviously it's, you know, it's public knowledge that, you know, KG, who he was choosing, he talked about in all the smoke. He talked about the Lakers, he talked about the Celtics, the Suns, the Warriors. And he, you know, he tried to call Kobe and that summer. And ironically, Kobe ran to Pau Gasol that summer because Pau Gasol has shared that story where that's where he and Kobe ran into each other. And then the Pau trade happens the following February. So they all kind of landed where they were supposed to and then went to those battles. But there was so much love, so much respect. And, you know, Kevin had been spending a lot of off-season time in LA for many years, and he was hoping to really increase their FaceTime together and build on that connection. And it's an amazing connection to think about, but it's also very sad to think about what it could be now and moving forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is something that kind of, I picked up on that just in that one scene. And again, people, you'll watch it. It's really moving. And a lot of this is, and I just want to say, because we hit on some of the more, tougher moments, I was smiling for most of this movie. I was watching this for 2 hours. I would just smile because it was just so much fun. You know, there are some tough moments, but Kevin Garnett's career is a blast. And Kevin Garnett talking about his career in a way that I think we rarely have seen was a blast. So this was a lot of fun. This interview was a lot of fun. Appreciate you guys coming on, spending the time. Congrats on the film. It's Kevin Garnett, Anything is Possible, on Showtime on Friday, November 12th, and on the app and all the other Showtime platforms. By the time you're listening to this, it should already be up and available. So go watch it, folks. I don't know what you're waiting for. Like, hit stop on your damn podcast player. Go watch the film. And it's a blast. I can't wait to see what comes next from you guys and more with Garnett. Eric Newman, Brian Daly, thanks, guys. Really appreciate the time.
Thank you, Harold. Thanks, Howard. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Eric Newman and Brian Daly. Thanks to our producer, Shelby Royston. And thank you all, as always, for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And then on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. Go subscribe to the Sports Illustrated podcast channel on YouTube. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter, @HowardBeck.